Can I walk here beside you? Can I speak your name? Can I just be here? Can I speak in anger? Can I speak in shame? Can I just be here?
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. It's a 3-hour per day broadcast where we talk to people who will very likely not be mentioned more than a couple of times on mainstream media, and certainly won't be given enough airtime in order to tell their stories in full. Those people who are normally reduced to sound bites, which say nothing, when in actual fact, if you give them the time to speak, they'll tell you everything you need to know. My very special guest today is Chris Wardell, coming at us from Australia. Chris, welcome to the program.
Hi, Vinny. I'm actually in Central Otago.
Oh, really? Have you moved, mate?
I didn't move over to Australia. I've been in Central Otago for about the last 8 or 9 years.
Oh, really? Well, I totally had that screwed up then. Well, I guess that's the way the cookie crumbles, I guess. Yeah, I'm not going to go back to Otago. I spent a year in Dunedin, and I watched my olive oil freeze at room temperature. Not an experience I hope to relive anytime soon. But you're welcome to it.
Yeah, it's not a nice day today down here, but it was stinking hot the last couple of days.
Yeah. All right, well, let's get down to business, as they say. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what it is you do?
We moved to New Zealand on the 1st of January 1976, me and my family. I spent the last 8 years, or before the last year, going through all kinds of manipulations and having to obey all these people that were just frauding and hijacking my family life, and that just because they thought that they could. And so I've just been making people aware of it and come across a whole lot more of scumbaggery and just exposing it.
Well, could you be specific?
Oh, scumbaggery. All the politic things that are going on. I'm quite interested in sort of knowing about that, and when they dump and lie on the country, I like to tell the people about it, and, you know, and bad people who work in these government departments, I like to let people know. Or know that they're there to be wary of them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, specifically what? What are people supposed to be wary of in terms of the political spectrum?
Oh, like getting caught up with bailiffs on their doorstep, with family court papers, and going to places like SIFs for family group conferences and having the whole meeting that's pre-arranged, and they won't get to say a thing, and decisions would have already been made, and people who are supposed to be working in government departments are actually tied in with on the Treaty of Waitangi board and things like that.
Yeah.
And so their influence to the courts and that, you know, because they're a family court lawyer too, you know, whatever they say, you know, sort of like, you know, the judge goes, ah.
Well, are you talking that there's kind of an incestuous nature between the various legal departments around the country, kind of thing?
Oh, it's very corrupt. It's very corrupt. I've been told I need a Queen's Counsel lawyer. You know, I've asked for help. I've asked for lawyers. I've asked the priests. I've asked everybody I could, really. And I just either get ignored, have the police turn up, and all sorts of unnasty pleasantries.
Again, could you be more specific? Because you've been waiting off on coming back on the show for quite some time, and you said you had some important things to talk about. What are they?
Oh, things like I've got a stutter too, so sometimes it takes me a bit to get my words out. There's legal people there's a lady called Barbara Collis. She lives in the Potiki. She comes from Kutariri. Her friends are the people who stole James Tackamore's body on the same day that there was a family group conference. And I ended up going to court and just having 2 days on the stand, having to explain myself when I wasn't even the applicant. You know, I was being targeted as a racist by the media because my jaw was smashed open, and I went to hospital and got operated on, and my attacker was let out before me because I was arrested for getting my jaw smashed open. And sort of everything just seems to go against people who are trying to stand up for themselves. Are you there?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because in a family court, I've got a newspaper here. It's dated the 14th of July, 2009. It's A6 of the Christchurch Press. There was a meeting with the child psychologist Michael Davidson from Christchurch. He came down. There was applicants. That was Ramri Manuel, Solomon Manuel, and I think Tanya Manuel of Southbridge was there too. And the child psychologist was going to see whether my daughter reacted all right with them, and they got a phone call saying, "Oh, there's been a death in the family." So that night, they left, and the next day, they were in the newspaper there, and that was soon after my jaw was smashed, and the Otago Daily Times had already put in there that I was a racist and all that, you know, like, even though my daughter's Maori, and I've done all I could to protect her, pretty much. And so we went to family court, and Judge Emma Smith was on the bench, and she was like teaming up with Barbara Collis, you know, saying to me, "Oh, you know, answer the question, you know, things I didn't really want to answer." And she was going, "Oh, you're just a racist and that sort of thing." And my daughter's lawyer, Nicola Williams, she says to me that any concerns that you have for your daughter aren't any concerns to the family court. And they denied stealing James's body in court, and Judge Emma Smith believed it, of course, and then the family, then the parenting order come out saying I, Kristen Pooldale, shall have the role of providing day-to-day care for my daughter, the child, blah, blah, blah. Says, Ramri Manuel Solomon, an extended family, shall have contact with my daughter during following ways in Southbridge, Canterbury on 25th April 2010 from 11am to 9pm and blah, blah, blah. That's what my Christmas is. I've got the legal documents of this on my Facebook, which explains that they're to have my daughter every Christmas and holidays against my wishes, at my expense, of course. You know, even though the applicants have pretty much reduced my $3,000 car to $100 car now, so now that car's gone. But you know, it's not what it's about. So I went to the newspaper and I said to them, "Hey, this is bloody crazy, you know, sort of thing." And they sort of more or less says, "Well, we don't want to know." So I phoned them up. I talked to a young girl from Clyde, and she says, she called the police and said that I threatened to kill her and Ruth Dyson, and, you know, and all these other people, because this all, even though Ruth Dyson's name was taken off the charge sheet. She deliberately got it taken off to save herself embarrassment from this, because when this all started, I contacted Ruth Dyson, and I said to her, "Hey, you know, what's going on?" That sort of thing, and she called me back and said, "Well, I've just changed the law that makes it so anybody in New Zealand can go for legal guardianship of anybody's child." And I says to her, "Well, why is that?" And she says, "Well, I just changed the law so they can, you know." And it's just been one rocky road up and down since then.
It sounds like almost like the America's Cup. If just when you're close to winning, the people who currently possess the cup just change the rules on you.
Oh, the rules have been changed the entire time, eh? Like, it's been more or less, you do what I say, don't do what we do, you know.
Well, let's say, for example, they're just doing whatever they're doing and just pretend that there's rules so that people don't realise that they're a fraud and a front for something.
Well, the applicants, the family court applicants, Ramri, Tanya and Solomon, because it was a tag team effort, they never once obeyed a single court order or anything. You know, they made excuses, they stole us off us, they lied to us, they never... You know, they hardly ever rang my daughter, and they don't ring anymore since they lost the court case. So you know, so it shows their intentions. Then their lawyer, Barbara Collis, she apparently was going apeshit about it because I wasn't even allowed at the court, because I'm banned from the courts and the police station unless it's a life and death emergency. Yeah, it's been a pretty hard battle ever since it started. Actually, I've been when they had a overnight stay with my daughter, Tanya slept in a separate room. Horomona, who's on the front page of that newspaper I was telling you about in the article, and my daughter's cousin Travis ended up sleeping in the bed with her instead. And my daughter said something about it, and I was worried that she had been like messed with. So I went to the court and told that to the judge, who should have been the judge all the way through it, but she quit because her views would have been biased. So I ended up getting a referral to the information centre in Alexandra, where there's a police constable. And we were talking, and I was really angry and upset, and I sort of said, "Well, you know, I feel like killing the bastards, you know." And the next day, the armed defenders were on our doorstep. You know, my daughter's inside watching TV, and the phone calls and says, and someone says, "Is this Mr. Chris Woodell?" And I says, "Yes." And I says, "Oh, this is the armed police. We have your house surrounded. Come outside and put your head on your hands." So I'd done that, and then subs came in, and my daughter was taken away for the rest of the term. and it's just, like instead of trying to help people, all they did was really, try and punish my daughter and myself, really. And then they had a family group conference, and there was three women there, and Nikki Borham, all talking away, making all the comments, and the applicants were on the phone, and they actually got to say quite a bit. I didn't get to say anything. Everything was all arranged, pre-planned. and so I asked Nikki later after that, I said to her, why did you let it go through like that? And she didn't answer, and I asked her a few more questions, and she didn't answer. And then my lawyer at the time, Tim Cadogan, Tim used to work in radio. The Clyde Pools got shut down because over admin fees. He's the same guy who used to do the Alexander Blossom Festival, but they had to lay him off because of excessive admin fees. Well, anyways, there was me, my mother, there was Nikki Borham at SIFS, there was Tim Cadogan, and there was my sister-in-law, Lisa, who works at Malco Central Limited. It's a computer place in Cromwell. We were all there, standing outside SIFS, and Tim goes, "Oh, I quit." And I said, "What?" And he goes, "Oh, I quit. Why?" And so he left, and there was a court thing to excuse him, because he said, because he said he didn't quit in court, and Nikki sat there, she didn't say anything, so he actually got paid twice. Why I say he got paid twice is he got paid from the courts, plus all our expense money, like going to Dunedin for overnight stays, and meals and that, so we could go to court. And then drive all the way back again. And we've done that a couple of times then, and I got the money back from Balkans, but Tim was going to hand it. And he handed me $35 out of it and pocketed the rest. And that's the thing, so he more or less got paid twice for it. And my daughter was, she needed feeding and that, but Tim thought it, he needed it. I was pretty upset about that. And there's just so much to say.
Keep going, Chris, get it all out, man.
It's like, they had a whole lot of things like S77, prevention removal of child from New Zealand, because I knew that I wanted to take my daughter to Geraldton, Ontario, to show her where we used to live, because we used to live in between two Indian reservations, and I wanted to show her that my father helped set up that, and his name's on a plaque and everything and that sort of thing, but my culture wasn't, my culture was just pretty much spat on and gone, like it didn't really give us stuff, to these family court applicants. I've been called racist many times. I'm not racist. My daughter's Maori, and I love it a bit, and I die for her, and I won't let anybody hurt my daughter, and I especially won't let them scumbags have it every Christmas like I said to them, over my dead body. Well, anyways, there was just so much jargon that was going on, eh? The lies, my wife died, and a week after she died, we buried her, because that's Maori culture, and I respected that, and the night we buried her, I was beaten up. I was coughing up blood the next day because of it. I'm not too, well, like, I didn't seek medical help for it because I was pretty bummed out. And I arrived down here, and within the first 5 minutes of arriving back at my brother's house, you know, I was sitting down, and the police turned up about me kidnapping my daughter. So, so they saw that she was all right, and they left. And then a couple of days after that, SIFs turned up because the applicants had told SIFs I was abusing my daughter. And they left, because my daughter was all right, they didn't see any problems with her. And then a few days later, the bailiff turns up with all this family court crap. You know, it's like, you know, with this big, huge jail, it was about an inch thick of these family court, you know, papers said. And I did read it all, and it said in there that the only way that there's going to be any contact is through a lawyer. So they made that quite clear.
Isn't it? I always find that one of the most frustrating things about the legal system is that you can't just openly communicate with each other in a reasonable format. You have to pay someone $700 an hour to do it for you.
Oh, it's just total madness. So, they've actually missed out on getting to know my daughter. You know, because my daughter makes up her own mind, and you know, after everything that's gone on, I don't feel she's that way inclined to want to go see them. Anyways, I got onto the internet years ago, because I was really frustrated and I was at like busting point with all this. And I got approached by someone in AXJ called Eduardo. And actually, it's the biggest mistake I ever did with getting mixed up with them. Because I've since learnt after trying to help them, I've received a message from John Astor saying, let's get him with some fake profiles that, you know, will destroy him and you'll never know where it comes from. And that's when I clicked on what was actually happening. And then and then a few days after that or the next day, I started getting messages, and I'm still getting messages from people, you know, from him saying, oh, my name's such and such and I really like you and that sort of stuff, and you know, blah blah blah. You know, but it's just one of his fakes, because he's got 884 fakes at least. Well, anyways, I was trying to help them, but little did I know, I was actually on the wrong side. And from trying to get help from these people, my name's been slandered all over the internet. I molest children, I rape children, I molest dead children. I abuse my children, that sort of thing. What these people are putting out on the internet, and it's just totally sick and crazy. It's sort of as if these people are actually working with the courts. You know, they give you a safe net to fall. You know, a safe net, and someone's there, they can with the someone there with a knife cutting the net away, you know. You know, fall in that safe net and it'll cut the net so you fall through and now land on your face. Sort of. Yeah, and it's just been really frustrating. So I'm nothing what they say I am. I do have my daughter. I love her to bits. She's happy. She's at school today. And nothing can ever tear us apart.
You know, I think when we talk about these sorts of things, I think the difference between the court system to a large degree and the family court system is that in the court system, if you make an accusation, you have to provide evidence to substantiate the claim. Otherwise, you can be done for defamation. In the family court system, you can make an accusation and that's considered evidence without any evidence of any frickin' kind ever. And if you deny it, you're a criminal.
Well, in family court, when I said that they were the ones who actually stole James because their brother is on the front page of that newspaper, you know, carrying his coffin, and they denied it in family court. And Judge Emma Smith just looked at me and says, "Oh, you're just a bloody racist, you know, it's just total madness." That's just total madness, eh? Like the family court lawyer could lie and say, well, you know, even though it's been in the newspaper, and the numbskull judge just sits there and goes, oh, I'm taking sides with the majority. You know, I'm not going to stand up for this father. He did nothing to even deserve to be here. You know, and we tried to murder him by proxy. By all these legal documents and jargons and get them institutionalised each time he asked for help and stuff like that. Like, they threw me in 9B about three or four times, so, you know. That's at Waikerie Hospital in Dunedin. It's a mental patient place, sort of thing. And, they threw me there every time I asked for help. That was one of the places. And that one time, I actually got so sick to death of it, I actually tried to overdose. And so my mum drove me down to the hospital there and told me to wait on the grass on the lawn there. And I was waiting there on the grass, like she'd come home to grab a few things. And Dave Greaves and his monkey boy arrive in their patrol car, and they get out of the car and they walk over to me and they said, "Get in the fucking car, cunt." And I said no, so I was actually nudged out, you know, forced out of the car, pushed into the car. After we left the hospital, going down the road, it was just a constant pounding in my head as he was punching me in the head in the back seat. And that was going on practically all the way into Alexandria, and going past the Pioneer Park, I started yelling out for help, going, "Help!" And the guy who was sitting next to me in the back seat pushed my head below the window so nobody could see me, and Dave Greaves turned the siren on so nobody could hear me, and we got back to the cop shop, and I was taken out of the cop car. I was dumped on my face. I was handcuffed behind my back, and Dave Greaves stomped on my liver, and that just totally wound me up. Yeah, so I got a picture of that, and, you know, and all my other injuries, you know. And yeah, I ended up in the in a 9B that day because I was also thrown at the police station after Dave Grease had stomped on my liver, I was dragged to another part of the police station, which has now camera security on it. They pulled my pants down. They left me on a cold concrete floor in a glass cell, and left me there, and just you know, and was all laughing at me. You know, there was about 15 of them all there. You know, and they're just evil bastards. You know, my mate Keith, who died, I found him dead, about 15 years ago after a party, you know, after we were partying on some things. He told me ages ago to be careful, you know, to never go to Central Otago because how did he put it? They're all a bunch of rednecks. I totally believe him now.
Yeah, well, I was arrested in Dunedin, and I've been arrested in Auckland, and I must say that the Auckland police were a lot nicer.
I've got no convictions for any sex crimes or anything. You know, I'm not on the sensible sentencing trust. So anybody out there who feels like, you know, spreading crap again, you know, look it up. You know, the SST New Zealand. I'm not on there. I've been arrested for drunk driving, assaulting a police officer when he stuck his thigh in my face, because I bit it. You know, and just for a bit of pop, but that was like years and years and years ago. Before my daughter was even born. I've got no dishonesty charges at all, because I don't like thieves. No. I just can't see how they can target widowed fathers who had just buried their wife, you know, just instantly zone in on them through the family courts. It's like predatory, mate. It's like sick.
People don't understand the motivation behind this predatory nature, and I think it's because these people have no humanity in common with them, and that's why you can't understand the actions, you know? I mean, let's say, Chris, for example, you were some kind of ruthless criminal, pedantic, predatory, sociopathic scumbag, and you were attacking somebody like you because you thought it was fun. You know, it'd make perfect sense to you, but for the person who it happens to... No such sense exists.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy, eh? Like Rahmer Emanuel, the applicant on family court, my wife told me the day before she died that her sister Rahmer dated a guy who had raped Rahmer's daughter. Rahmer raped the guy who raped her daughter up until the day he was jailed. And she also said that her father, Solomon Manuel, has gone through family court for all his niece, you know, for all his mokapuna or whatever. And there's no way the courts will even let you prove anything like that, because they just go, we're not going to let you prove nothing, mate. We're just going to, you know, we're just going to give you what we're going to give you, and, you know, and whatever you say, whatever you do, you know, it's not going to make the slightest bit of difference to our heinous plan.
Is that kind of the intention? Because, again, the irony factor, what's a cop supposed to do? Well, they're supposed to make sure that they've got some kind of evidence and then punish the people who are guilty, as opposed to go and punish somebody and then determine later on whether or not there's any evidence or whether or not they're guilty. And if they're not, and if there isn't any evidence and they're not guilty, they'd just say that there is, and and make their life hell just for the fun of it, you know.
Well, they actually, I do believe they enjoy doing what they're doing, you know, sitting behind the desk, you know, getting people who have just lost loved ones, you know, dragging them through the court, wasting their time, wasting their money, wasting a whole lot of opportunities for their children, and then getting the police involved to, you know, to cover up their loose ends. This is a thing I got from last time I was actually in the courthouse. It says here, hearing date of 20th September 2012. For Sergeant Colin Ford, defendant, judgment 20th September. Okay. That's for judges, I just got. Mr. Ordell, you appeared before me for sentence today on three charges of threatening to kill, when there should have been four charges, because Ruth Dyson's name should have been on the team. But anyway, three charges to kill. The charges all relate to an incident where you framed the Central Otago office of the Otago Daily Times. You spoke to a reporter there. You wanted a particular story printed. You became aggressive and made threats involving three people. Well, it wasn't three people. It was four people. Ruth Dyson, you maggot. You should be on your tea. Okay. The victim impact report that I have read indicates that all three victims who you made threats to were clearly concerned when informed of those threats. I have had placed before me a number of reports. There is a report prepared by probation and what is known as a 38 report, which has been prepared by a consultant psychiatrist, Dr. Bathgate. What is clear from the reports that are before me, and particularly the most recent report from Dr. Bathgate, is that he believes that you have a long-standing history which is suggestive of an organic brain disorder which occurred as a result of you contracting meningitis. It appears from the medical reports on three occasions where you were aged 5, 12 and 15. This is extremely as usual, and it goes on and on. You know, it's makes you sick of bloody death with all these reports and stuff.
Yeah, it can be quite difficult, especially if there's nobody there. Have you found yourself all on your own dealing with this crap, or have you had a bit of a support network there, Chris?
I do have a wee tiny support network, but it's just family, really. All the people that I used to hang out with, you know, before this family court thing, you know, they've all abandoned me, and nobody talks to me, and no one says hi to me. You know, like to most people here, I may as well not even exist. But you know, but hey, I do. And I'm glad I'm telling my story today, because it needs to be told.
Do you find that you've kind of have to keep your mouth shut? Like I can talk about these sorts of things with my family, and they just don't want to hear it, you know. And you kind of choose to just keep your mouth shut, and it just sort of sits inside you, burning away until you get to talk about it with somebody. Is that similar?
Yeah. This sat inside me for ages and ages and ages, and just ate and ate and ate away at me. Like I was trying to, probably about a year or two ago, I was actually going to do something really stupid, but I'm not going to do it now, because it's just not worth it, and my daughter needs her dad, and I'm not going to let these bastards, you know, ruin their lives.
Do you find that sometimes it doesn't matter how hard you try to prevent somebody from ruining your life, they just ruin it anyway? And it's more like you're not trying to prevent them ruining your life anymore. They're trying to you're trying to prevent them from just taking it altogether.
Yeah, they had a really good go at it. I sort of believe they were trying to kill me by proxy. trying to drive me insane. That's sort of knowing that I've had meningitis with encephalitis and, you know, and a number of other things. And, oh, they just pick vulnerable people. And, you know, with a little bit of help from Ruth Dyson, the Alexandra Police, Barbara Collis, who's a Treaty of Waitangi board member and a family court lawyer. There's, I sort of felt at times the mental health team as well were in on it, but I sort of realised they're not, and I'm now not on the mental helping. You know, I'm they discharged me because I'm doing everything rationally instead of doing exactly what they want me to. Because I reckon they would have been trying to get me to do something really, really stupid, you know, so they give me, you know, I would have given the reason to shoot me to, you know, to get my child. But I think this has something to do with a will as well. Oh, my daughter, she's got her great auntie Mariah. Dead child's names in my daughter's name, and she says, you know, she says, if you name your daughter after my deceased daughter, I'll leave my will to your daughter, you know, but that wasn't that wasn't what I was after, you know, because it's her thing, and because just out of respect. You know, and it's the leaseland of 50,000 hectares of forestry land which is done through the Whakatoa Trust. But I'm not interested in any of that. My daughter can sort that out when she gets old enough to, you know, be able to sign papers and do legal stuff, whatever. It's got nothing to do with me, but I just think it was part of their intentions of doing this because the monies that Mariah used to bring home before she went off to the pub, you know, and spent it all on the pokies, you know, like the applicant and all that would come over and they'd say, oh, the stupid old bitch didn't buy me anything. And it's like, and it's like, mate, you know, and, oh, they're just evil.
Now, the term evil, there's some people out there who don't believe it exists. What about you?
Oh, yep, I know evil exists. I know evil can also turn people evil, but with a lot of help and support from people, you can sort of like see above all the evil and find a much more peaceful solution than being really, really wiped out from, you know, from the evilness and just sort of like, you know, counteracting the evilness with something, but that's not how I like to play, you know, like, I don't even like to play the damn game, I just want to be left the hell alone, live my life with my daughter.
Yeah, well, there's two types of people in the world, those who want to be left alone, and those who won't leave you alone.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I've defined evil as, being good as restraining yourself from doing certain things, and being evil is never restraining yourself at all.
Yeah, well, I was, I actually got rid of my, my firearm. I got rid of that about, and I was telling you I was going to do something really evil, but I didn't. I ended up getting rid of that, because it's up in Mochiwaka, it's got a new owner now. He's got a gun license, so it's all good. I don't have possession of that anymore, so I'm all good with that. and I never want a gun in the house anyways.
Wow, sometimes it is kind of a good idea in terms of just defending yourself, but how do you defend yourself against the armed offender squad, you know? And that's the thing, it just gives them an excuse to come after you.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. It would just give them all an excuse to, you know, put my lights out.
He's got a gun, he's got a gun. He's completely unarmed, he's completely unarmed. Ironically, they're more afraid of the person who's completely unarmed because they can't just shoot him.
Yeah, I'll have to pull out a banana instead or something. No, but I wouldn't even do that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But the thing is, if you did pull out a banana, they'd still shoot you. You'd be like, he pretended he had a weapon, I saw it on him. You know, they'd just plant one on you.
Yeah, they'd shoot me, and if I survived it, they'd do me for frauding a firearm.
Yeah, he pulled a banana out threateningly, and I was very afraid because I was only covered from head to toe in body armor.
Yeah, bright yellow too.
Yeah, it's like, what are you afraid of, copper? You're afraid you'll slip, a gun will go off.
Yeah, that's the very first time I've ever had police point guns at me, and it really done. It really done my head and I for ages.
Well, didn't they do a number on you much earlier on? You had some kind of a big real estate deal or something going on that the scumbag stole off you.
Hello?
You might be a different Chris Wardell.
A real estate. We moved from the North Island. Down here, but I don't think we ever got ripped off by real estate. Oh, except for the real estate dude who sold the house up. He ended up keeping the spa pool that was there and selling the house without it. But you know, that's not a big deal. You know, we sold the house and we moved on.
So you weren't the one who had like some kind of a deal being worked on in Mount Maunganui or something like that that a bank stole?
No.
No? I don't remember who that was then. Okay. Yeah. I've got you confused with somebody else then, Chris.
Yeah. Well, Mount Maunganui is actually 1 meter below sea level, or downtown Mount Maunganui. So if it floods there, or if the flood's over, you know, if you get like a Hurricane Katrina or something, you know, then the mount will be screwed because it's a meter under, it'll be at least a meter underwater.
Now, in terms of your personal story, so basically your only real issue here is the way the family court's been treating you, isn't it? And the police and the scum basically working in concert with them. It's not just an isolated incident and just you, though, is it?
Oh, no. I've been talking to other people. I thought my case was bad. Eh? Like, I have people who are probably on the verge of, like, committing suicide, mate, and I've been trying to help them and just, you know, trying to help them out with helpful advice, you know, like see a lawyer, you know, like record everything, you know, things like that.
Yeah, definitely record everything, because I've noticed that if you don't have it on tape, the cop never said it, okay? If a cop lies to you and then admits that he lies right in front of you and then you go and tell somebody else about that, they go, really, where's the evidence? Like, he did it right in front of me. And they're like, yeah, but did he record it? No. Okay, well, then there's no evidence, therefore he never did it. And this is the problem. And it does it with lawyers, judges, and cops and family court staff. Always, at any point in time where you're having a conversation with any of these people, have a recording device going every time, you know, just keep yourself safe. It's like having a shield of protection that you can say the truth and know for a fact that if they don't, you can crush them with the truth that they cannot escape. The unfortunate business is people have been learning to trust these particular authorities quite significantly, and I believe that when you trust people who cannot be trusted, you always wind up in some kind of trouble. There's an old saying that you can trust a thief, but you can't trust a liar.
Yeah, I don't trust either, to be honest. I don't trust a thief or a liar. But anyway, I don't trust the police or the courts or lawyers or any of them, mate. Like I even tried to get help from John Key about it, and John Key just blocked me. I says to him, "Hey man, how come these people are allowed to abandon me at a family court ordered meeting with a psychologist, you know, to go steal a dead body, then have the Wellington Supreme Court just totally ignore it, without bringing the rest of the people in New Zealand in on it, that these people in the Wellington court with the body of James Tackamore, that they actually are the people, you know, that they actually abandoned me, you know, to go, you know, and my daughter to go steal James." And, you know, and John Key's response was, "Oh, block him." And so I tried as well with the International Human Rights Organization, or Amnesty International. I can't really remember which one it was. I wrote to them about it, and I remember hearing on the radio about John Key, who was approached by one of these organisations, and they were told that, "Oh well, he's not really a New Zealand citizen anyway, so it's okay." And you know, and I'm just, you know, so people who aren't born in New Zealand, it's our Prime Minister thinks it's okay to steal off you, to lie off you, to waste your time, to target you when you get back from burying your wife, you know, to send bailiffs around, you know, to involve SIPs, you know, to try and make your daughter a ward of the state, so she'll always have to ask, you know, or to wipe her ass or whatever whenever she wants to go anywhere or do anything, because she won't be able to, because she'd be a ward of the state. Well, anyways, I got all that thrown out of court in the end, anyways. That's when I wasn't allowed to turn up in court, so I had my mum do my family court thing in the end.
I once talked to a man outside the High Court in Auckland, and he told me how he got his child back. I think it was after about 3 years going in and out of the family court. He said, "Today, I'm either going to go to prison or I'm going to get my kid back." And what did he do? Well, he accused the judge of being a pedophile. He got his kid back.
Well, I do believe that they're all, you know, like that Roastbusters, for example, you know, that was policemen's children doing that, and the police wouldn't investigate it because it was their kids. And if the police won't investigate it, well, the judges and the courts have probably got, I don't know, I'm not saying, but they could have their hands in it as well, you know, with their children, or even go out, like, grooming, you know, sort of thing, you know, because
Pedophilia is big business, and it's not just big business in this country, it's actually big business everywhere.
It's a global problem, eh? We have all these government organisations, like over here we've got SIFs over in America, and we've got CPS and in the UK as well, you know, and probably everywhere else, you know, you've got all these children being stolen from their families. Well, they go into these places and they're placed with abusers, and the abusers and the courts and that place these people who are abusers next to schools and places like that, and you know, they just got no, well, there's no, no coordination, and there's no coordination or follow up or any investigative things in any of it. They just put them here and there, and they go, oh, I should be right. Next, you know, well, they either end up dead, raped, suicidal, or whatever, and, you know, and meanwhile, who profits from it? It's all these legal numbnuts.
Well, on top of that is the carers themselves. It was $5,000 per child, I think, and we've had a look at some of these so-called foster homes. So you've got, in the case of, I think, Philippa Cunningham, her daughter was in a home with like 9 other children and only one woman taking care of them, and you wind up getting $5,000 per child plus I think it was $175 per week per child. So she's pulling in quite a substantial pay packet just for taking care of children that have been stolen from somebody else.
Yeah, it's big business, so they put the dollar sign ahead of the child's welfare.
And Daniel Ryder, a noted activist in this field, has also, he claims to have discovered that there are a significant portion of the child, youth and family services payroll who are known pedophiles. Just working for the organisation. Yeah, we know they're paedophiles. We know we're working for them. Don't you think that's kind of like a bad idea to put paedophiles in charge of children in a job that allows them to outrank and order around police, including prevent themselves from being investigated? Don't you think that's a bad idea? They go, no, it's a brilliant idea, because that way we can do whatever we want. Holy cow! Is it that bad? Unfortunately, in a lot of cases, yes. And it's a hell of a lot worse than I could even conceivably explain to you. I haven't been a child who's abused. That's why I can't explain to you just how bad it is. We'll be right back after the break with my very special guest, Christopher Wardell, in just a few minutes, ladies and gentlemen. Don't you go anywhere.